And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin. Who's Talking, featuring interesting guests from our community on News Talk 1360 WCATL. Now, here is D.G. Martin.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I've been looking forward to this one a long time because, you know, I don't go a day without somebody talking about how they miss the newspapers, and then they start mourning about the print media is dead. Nationally, we see that magazines are going out of business. They just can't make it. The Newsweek is having trouble. U.S. News and World Report had to go to monthly. So we say the print media is dead, but not in Chapel Hill. And the reason it's not dead here, a large part of it, is Dan Shannon, who is the publisher, the founder, the owner, and exercises some editorial direction, although he has a very fine editor who runs the magazine. And I'm talking now about Chapel Hill Magazine. But what interests me as much as Chapel Hill Magazine is the fairly recent, within the last couple of years, Dan is building on the success of Chapel Hill Magazine, has founded Durham Magazine. So, Dan Shannon, welcome.
It's so good to be here.
Well, why?
DG, thank you.
What in the world would you try to have two brand new magazines in two different communities when juggling one would be enough for any sane person?
Yeah, good questions. We started Chapel Hill Magazine almost 5 years ago now. There was nothing like it in town. The newspaper was a lot stronger than it is now. So, you know, there was a definite risk to it at the time, but it hit a sweet spot. It really did. The readers really like it. It's the frequency seems to be almost okay.
It's like six times a year, seven times a year,
including our visitor guide. It probably should go to eight times a year, just in terms of the reader demand. And I think that's a good rhythm to it. In any case, Chapel Hill Magazine was very successful in terms of its readers and its advertiser response. And I happen to love Durham. I live in Chapel Hill, but I've been going to Durham ever since for a long time. And I got to tell you, Durham is a different market and different city, different community. You know, the tar devil idea. I mean, it doesn't blend easily. The barriers between the two communities have merged a little bit. You go up 15-501, there's no real break anymore like there used to be.
There's a lot of overlap, but they're still different. Is that sort of the way?
That's very much the way. But I looked at Durham a long time before I started Durham Magazine. I went and visited. I talked to people. And many of the people I talked to up there, the Chamber of Commerce, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, I mean, they thought, well, it's a grand idea. By all means, start a magazine up here. But I'm used to that. I understand why it makes sense. But I looked at it long and hard, and the more I looked, the more excited I got. After a year of looking in Durham, I started a new magazine. Of course, it was the first day of the recession, so that
you picked a real good time.
It wasn't necessarily the brightest timing, but you know, I've been a beneficiary of good timing, so I can't complain. But you know, we did it right. We opened a new office there on Duke Street, hired a new staff, got people from stalwarts, locals. Dana
Let
Lang,
me interrupt you.
Yeah,
I want you to tell us who they are, because some of our listeners will know
sure.
some of these folks. But the conclusion that I leapt towards was, oh, Dan's figured out, got his formula for a magazine, and what he can do is change covers and take the Chapel Hill Magazine, throw one or two Durham stories in, and he's got his Durham Magazine, and so there are enough efficiencies created so that it's not that much. He's really just kind of expanding his subscriber base or his target base.
Right.
But that's not what you did.
It's not. We really started it all over again. We just did a whole different magazine. For a local magazine to succeed, it's got to reflect the community it serves. It's, you know, that's my business plan. If I can capture the, you know, essence, the gestalt of Durham in a magazine and a publication, I'm going to win. It's going to be accepted.
Let's come back to Durham.
Okay.
I'm excited about that. That's still new venture. And you could argue that Chapel Hill Magazine's old stuff, it's like the old well. It's been here for a while. But there are, for a lot of people in Chapel Hill, they see it, may get it. You know, they may be on the sort of preferred subscription list and get it and love it. But it's not like it is. They still don't know where it's coming from. I mean, they like it, but the story is something they're not really familiar with. So tell us the story of Chapel Hill Magazine and why it's, you know, why it's here and what's your idea.
I'm going to want your opinion on that too. But I'll tell you the facts. The facts are, we moved here. My family moved here, going on 8 years next month, without the slightest intention of starting a magazine. Now, my background's magazines.
Well, why'd you come here if you didn't come to start a magazine?
You know, it's not an interesting story, but it's fascinating to us. We were looking and looking for a place to go. I'm from Indiana, and I grew up in the Midwest, and I love the Midwest. But there wasn't a whole lot of excitement in my family to head back to the Midwest, I must say. We were up in the Northeast. We're in Connecticut. That's where publishing is, up in New York and whatnot. And to be honest with you, I was looking – had an eye towards getting out of there for a long time. Wanted to wait till my oldest daughter was out of high school. So we did, and we waited till Emma had graduated. She went to school in Virginia. Just a lot of things. You know what? You know what it is? We were down here looking around and thinking, you know, no real roots here. Looking around, and we were in Cary, and I'm looking around Cary, and all due respect to Cary, I didn't want to move to Cary. And my son said, you know, there's a baseball game over at some place called UNC Carolina, Boshmer Stadium. And we went over there, and it was a 78-degree sunny day. I'm sitting in the stands. My kids are running around. They're little at the time. And I'm sitting there thinking, whoa, this is where I want to be. It was like that. I looked at my wife. I said, what, are you kidding? This is beautiful. I want to be here. Now, I also wanted to be in college again, too. I wanted to be 30
years younger. Right.
Something about that day captured us.
Well, and so you all packed up, moved down here without jobs.
I kept a job up in Connecticut, so there was a lot of flying and stuff. And it was a publishing company. It was a great job, you know, to the degree that – it's helped support my family.
Did you have a background in the magazine business, or was this publishing other things?
No, it's all magazine, newspaper. I'm an old newspaper guy. Back in 1972, I got a job as a reporter at the Knickerbocker News, a Hearst paper in Albany, New York. So I got some roots back in the newspaper.
So you came to Chapel Hill fresh.
We did.
To some extent, people who come new appreciate some of these things like Boshmer Stadium more than people who've lived here a long time. They just say, my golly, is that possible that all of this could be here?
It's so much nicer than where I live.
How did you translate that excitement into the idea of I'll give these folks a magazine that celebrates some of these things that I find so engaging and exciting about the community?
My wife and I met in a publishing company, so we both have a publishing background, Ellen. And we knew that Chapel Hill didn't have its own magazine, obviously, from day one. And we talked about it. But frankly, you can't just push a button and start a magazine. You gotta be part of the community. If the magazine's going to be part of the community, I couldn't do this long distance. So anyway, after 3 years, though, which doesn't make me necessarily a very well-informed part of the community, if I'm answering your question, I lied to my wife. I said, hey, I'm thinking about doing a magazine, you know, but I had totally decided to do it because I just knew if I didn't do it, someone was going to do it. And then I'd kill myself. It would just be such
a – But you'd wake up one morning and there was what you knew you could do and somebody else jumped at it first.
This community, Chapel Hill, you need certain things in a community to have a successful magazine, a certain mass, a certain commercial base, a certain retail base, a certain sense of money and stuff. But you also got to have a community that people love. People want to be there. People are proud of being there. You look at all the great magazines around the country. You got a New York magazine, Chicago magazine. These are Washingtonian. These are communities that people really want to be part of and be in. You might not have one in a community. I hope I'm far enough away. I hope Gary, Indiana doesn't offend anybody. But I'll bet there's not a great Gary magazine. You know what I mean? You need a community that's – I apologize to everybody from Gary.
Yeah, you shouldn't have done that, but we're not going to cut it out because I love this, and I'm going to find somebody from Gary, and I'm going to play this for him.
I say Gary? I didn't mean Gary.
No.
So anyway, so we need that, and Chapel Hill fits that bill, doesn't it?
It is, and I tell you what, let's take a break. And when we come back, I want you to talk about the specifics that you began to see that might fit into a magazine before you started it, that you'd say, oh, yeah, this ought to be in the magazine, those kinds of things.
Sure.
Now, if you join us late, we're visiting with Dan Chown, who's the founder and the owner and the publisher and the editorial director of Chapel Hill Magazine. He and I'll be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and I'm visiting with Dan Chown, who is the founder, the owner of the Chapel Hill Magazine, which is an asset about the community that I just hear so many people talking about, Dan, that they love. They love to look at it. They love to get it. But they have no idea where it came from. And before the break, we were talking about how you and your family moved to Chapel Hill, loved it from the first, that you'd been in the publishing business. And so this idea begins to develop about a magazine. I kind of want to know what your – can you take yourself back to 6, 7 years ago and talk about the plan as it developed for a magazine, both what would be in it and then how you would launch it and how you'd get some advertising for it and get it printed. Give us a little history.
Yeah, I made a joke about it. I lied to my wife and told her I was thinking about doing a magazine. My wife, who is the co-owner, the co-creator, the co-everything on this magazine from day one, she probably knew I was lying to her because it was a Christmas. It must have been this
Yeah, well, what was the lie? You said you were thinking about starting a magazine.
Yeah, because, you know, you don't want to just say, hey, I'm going to quit my job and
so what was the
start
lie?
A new business.
You were thinking about it.
No, I was going to do it.
You weren't thinking. The lie
I was committed.
It wasn't a lie, actually, because you were thinking about it. But in addition to thinking about it, you'd committed to do it.
I knew.
And you weren't ready to tell her that quite
yet. I just knew it was a good idea. I just knew it. I
mean, why?
It's one of those
things
in your mind. For the reasons I've discussed, there was a commercial base in Chapel Hill that would support advertising. There's a lot of interesting people here. No end of interesting people here. Almost everybody here is interesting. DG, you've got a talk program on a radio that you haven't even...
We haven't scratched the surface.
You know.
Well, maybe with you, we finally scratched the surface.
Maybe you scraped the bottom of the barrel with me. I get that. But the truth is that you know that the
yeah, there's story everywhere.
There's story everywhere. And there's a great...
All right, so you knew that.
I knew that.
Were there particular... I mean, I'm just trying to...
Go
ahead. I'm trying to walk in your shoes. And if I were there, I would say, I want to have a magazine because I see... these stories that need to be told. Not only that there are a whole bunch of stories, but I see these stories that aren't being told the way they could be and illustrated the way they could be. And I'm just wondering if you remember if you had some of those thinking, this is going to be in my magazine.
You know, and I can't say that these stories needed to be done. What I knew was the stories of a community had to be done. What I told my writers from the first, and I was telling myself because I was learning too, I'd never done a magazine like this. This is all new to me. But I told my writers is that we don't have readers and we have neighbors. I said, look at it from that point of view. Write a neighbor something about our first cover story was about dancing at Weaver Street and the hoops there and stuff. That captured my eye. And I thought, I bet a lot of other people want to know about this stuff. I certainly do believe that if I'm interested in something – and my editors are interested in something, there's probably going to be a lot of other people out there. But our angle is we're organic. We're not judging the community. We don't cover it. We don't report on it per se. But everything we put in our magazine is true. But we're not news gatherers. We're storytellers.
So you're looking for a story rather than hot news or a breaking scandal
this isn't
or something
the right,
like
well,
that.
Scandal. That's
unless it's a good story.
Well, it's interesting. We're evolving. We've become a very credible source because everything we take it all seriously. If you buy an ad from us, you don't get a story in our magazine. I mean, it's just
no trade offs.
No trade offs. It's just that's bad for everybody. It's bad for the advertiser. Bad for the reader. The only beneficiary really is the publisher, who gets the money. So. You're touching on something very close to home. There's a vacuum forming in the news coverage in this world, in this country. And, you know, the big thought is how is this democracy going to continue
Well, now I think you're getting all this. I'm visiting with Dan Shannon about Chapel Hill Magazine, and I appreciate what you're saying. I think the magazine does open the door for discussion, but I don't think your focus is not on informing us politically.
No, not at all.
Getting ready for making big decision making. It's more on the storytelling. Here's some good stories, and here's some good people you ought to know. And
here's some interesting people doing interesting things, and you probably know them. And it might be a part of them that you don't know. We try to go a little bit left to center. We try to make it interesting. And these aren't for example, just to give you an example. We did a cover story on Patty Thorpe and her family. This is a good example of how we approach a story. Now,
Patty, of course, as everyone knows, is Chancellor Holdenthorpe's wife. And so you're talking about the Chancellor's family and his wife.
Yeah, and it's a good example of how we approach things. This was done – the article was done. The Q&A was done the month that he became Chancellor. It's a big – remember, it was so exciting. I mean, have you ever seen so much goodwill for someone taking that position? It was wonderful. Anyway, I was more interested in how it's going to affect the family, my readers. The next interview with Holdenthorpe, all due respect, would have been the 100th interview. The interview with Patty Thorpe and her family and her approach and her view of it. What's it like to be the wife of the new chancellor in our town? I mean, we're a small enough town. This matters to people. Like, people care. And her take on it I found fascinating.
Yeah. Well, this leads me to another question for Dan Shannon about Chapel Hill Magazine and how to cover it. And that is that if you're picking out generic stories, if you're trading off with your advertisers and just kind of doing with the formula, it's still a tough business. But it's not as tough as when you pick out a story as good as the story of the Chancellor's family. That you can't leave it to just anybody to go out and have that story told. So how do you get people who can go handle these stories in a way that a very sophisticated audience is going to appreciate, learn from, and say, hey, this wasn't done by formula. This was done by somebody who really cared about the family.
Indeed, one of the things you said is very important. It's a very sophisticated audience. Very well-educated audience, very affluent, very – all the things you would want. If you were building an opera house, you might build it here. It's got its built-in support. We have Andrea Griffith is the editor of the magazine. We got her – she's a – hope she doesn't mind me saying this – a great young kid from Our State Magazine, was an editor. In fact, worked with you on stories.
Right now, very fun. And a good background because the Our State approach is similar.
Very quality-oriented. Andrea Griffith makes a lot of the decisions. Lisa Rossi. We have Bree Bro, who's taking the photography. I'll probably leave somebody out. But we also got a lot of local people who want to write for us. And they're as good as any. Some of my best stories, as they say, have been, hey, I've got a story. Would you write about this? And as like as not, I'll say, would you write about this?
Yeah.
And this is, you know.
So if someone's listening who's got a story.
Write me. Dan Shannon at chapelhillmagazine.com. We're open. These are the stories we like. I taught one woman, I'm going to blank on her name, but. Anyway, she said, I've been our family's been here for six generations. And I said, write a story for me to your children, what you want to leave them for the seventh generation. And she did. It was fascinating. Another woman, Lori Clark, I was talking to her. Her family goes back seven generations, just to one up, and she's an African-American. And I said, does it go back to slavery? I don't know. It does. So I'm trying to talk her into writing an article about her family roots in Chapel. Who wouldn't read that?
Yeah, no. I want that one already.
I got the best job in the world. This is fun to do.
Well, those are the things that you were thinking about as you decided that you were going to have the magazine. You didn't know specifically, but you saw stories like this approaching. Now, what else did it take? You got a few writers, a few stories. You got to go out and sell some ads, and then you got to make arrangements with a printer, and you got to get a photographer. How do you do all that?
You just do it. I had to go out and sell ads to. Remember, I'd been here about 3 years, at the time. And people didn't know me. The commercial world didn't know me. They know me now. I mean, we probably talk to more companies every week than any other business in town. But I went out there and I, you know, hi, I'm Dan Shannon. Everyone thinks I'm from New York. I'm not, but everyone thinks it because of
well,
my—
Well, you came from Connecticut, so that's the same as coming from New York.
You know, I came from Indiana. But anyway, I lived and did the New York thing for a long time. So I went and talked to a lot of people, and a lot of people got what I was talking about. And they were willing, you know, this is real money. We don't discount our ads a penny. We can't do that. And I got $27,000 in commitments the first issue, which doesn't even begin to cover the cost.
But that's a significant—
But that's real money.
That's
people,
more than a drop in the bucket.
I remember the first check I got was $1,200 from somebody, and I was moved, visibly moved, that someone's really going to give me real dollars. And, you know, retailers and whatnot, they earn their money just like I did. It's, you know, they have to sell X number of dresses to afford this kind of thing. So we got $27,000 the first issue. Now, I just thought, wow, this is going to work. So I sold it. Now, since people don't know me, I did give them a guarantee.
Well, how can you guarantee them what?
If they don't like the magazine, they don't pay me. If they wake up on the wrong side of the bed when the first issue comes out and they don't like it, no questions asked, I'll rip up their bill.
And did anybody call you?
No. We.
Anybody sort of tease you and say?
No. I didn't brag about that guarantee. I didn't keep bringing it up. But I figured in lieu of a relationship, these people should have some kind
give
of
us
comfort
that,
level.
Give us that sales pitch where you're talking to a stranger and you say, all right, DG, you want to advertise Interstate Eateries, your book in my magazine, and if you're not— And I'll give you a little ad, and we'll help give you some help. We're not going to discount it, but we're going to give you some help on designing it. And DG, then what do you say? DG, if you don't like it?
I would say, Tony Hall, if we don't deliver what I say we're going to deliver, if it's different from your imagination, how you see it, just don't pay me. We'll just you know, tear up the bill, and I hope you give me a chance to get your business back. DG, the thing to remember is that there's not a whole lot of risk there, because I felt real confident that we're going to come out with a quality product. I really did. I just knew that we were going to work real hard to make
to
make it good.
Money back guarantees, that's something. Hey, Dan Shannon, the owner of the co-owner with your wife of Chapel Hill Magazine. We're going to take a quick break, come back and talk about that magazine.
Okay.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Dan Shannon, and we're talking about the magazine that he and his wife founded about 5 years ago in Chapel Hill. And we may talk a little bit about the Durham magazine, which is not fair to say it's an offshoot, because it's a freestanding tree over there by itself, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
Dan Shannon, I don't want to talk about Durham magazine right now. I want to talk about Chapel Hill magazine some more. And what did you learn after the first two or three issues? I don't want you to say it turned out just the way I thought it would in every respect. What did you learn that, looking back at it, you should have known about, that you could have anticipated if you'd been even smarter than you are? What are the lessons learned that along the way? Or did you even stop to think about the lessons learned? You just plow forward doing what you're
doing? Both those things. I remember I was driving to the beach after the third issue and thinking, have I become all of a sudden a successful publisher? You know, is that what's going on? And because I knew that people were loving it.
How do you know that? I mean,
you don't want to listen to everything people say. I mean, I'm not naive,
I mean, you know, Southerners are nice. They tell you that you're doing good even when you're not. You
yeah, but don't
that?
They add something afterwards?
No, they just say bless your heart sometimes. But I mean, you got to watch out about – at least I found out that some of my best friends will tell me how great I was, and then they'll go to the next person at the cocktail party and say, you know, poor pitiful DJ, he just didn't have it last night.
No, you know, we're pretty tough. We're pretty tough. We looked at the magazine, Ellen and I and other people, and we could tell that we were onto something. We could tell we were doing well. We could also tell that it needed to get a lot better quickly. I remember thinking, wow, this is a lot harder than I imagined to get it right, you know.
Why was it harder to get it right?
There's a learning curve for the community that I had to get to know this community a lot better.
I'm just trying to push you so hard. What did you learn? What other than just I had to do it better? I mean, what did you learn? What did you have to do better?
There's no substitute for hard work. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that.
Okay. I know.
Is all of it that you just learned you had to work harder? Is that – I mean,
well, not had to work harder. Just had to keep working hard. Had to go everywhere. I mean, people must think I have a twin because I go to – if anybody wants to see me, all they got to do is invite me. I'll show up anywhere. I love going out. And I get story ideas. I'm pretty – look, I'm a writer. My background is journalism. It's not business. I've become a businessman, and that's one of the things I had to learn a lot about very quickly. I'd manage budgets, manage staff, but it was never my money. All a whole different smoke. So I had to learn business. But I also had to learn a little humility. I go through the magazines, and I'm thinking, this reflects me. This reflects my sensibility and my mindset. And to a degree, it does. But the truth is, I'll go through – and if I'm candid, I'll say, oh, this story that was Andrea's idea. Oh, this Nancy Mitchell, our art director, suggested this. And I'll go through and there's darn little in here maybe that I have quite as much input as I think I do. I had to turn a lot of it over too as good of people as I could find.
Those of us who are not in this business, I kind of imagine what it's like. And one model – would be that you've got an editor or a publisher who knows what he wants and that he makes assignments to – he gets a cadre of good writers and says to them, I'd like for you to go cover the Patty Thorpe story. I'd like for you to go cover the Memorial Hall. I'd like for you to go cover the farmer's market story. Another model is someone who tries to recruit people who will generate stories and bring story ideas to
them.
Even
recruiting the right people – the first issues, I would say the first year, suffered a lot because I didn't know this community as well as I do now. I think that, for example, I think the second issue, we did a cover story on the farmer's market. I think, in fairness, you would read it now and think, it's kind of shallow, kind of something you might find in
a formula story,
yeah,
of farmer's markets.
Pretty good. I mean, yeah. we didn't shrug, but I didn't know what to look for. I would say now we would probably find the providers of the cabbage to the lantern or – you know, we know a lot more now than we do then. But did I know that then? I knew it wasn't good, but I knew it was getting better every issue.
Well, along those lines, tell us a couple of your – as you remember them now, a couple of your favorite stories that developed and ones that if you were – now, think if you're telling someone in your families back in Indiana about a story in Chapel Hill that would catch their imagination rather than just one that's in our community.
I hope
Farmer's Market story would be one, even though it might have been perfect, that you'd brag about the Farmer's Market. But what other stories are
– I like the people stories. I got to tell you, I lean towards them. We did a Q&A. This is a good example of how we approach things. We did a Q&A with Elizabeth Edwards right before her husband announced, back in a different life for them, as we all know. But I wanted to do her. I didn't care about him. I wanted to know what it's like to be Elizabeth Edwards, maybe a first lady, we were thinking back then.
Right, right, right.
In a smallish town.
So capture her
I want to know her. I want to know her story. I want to know what she thinks of all this. And it was after her book, and we entitled it The Next Chapter. And where the kids go to school. I've treated her like a local because she is, and she was trying to be, and she deserved to be, God knows. I thought that was a pretty good piece. I thought she shared a lot of her stuff. Now let's switch to probably a year ago. Andrea Griffith and I interviewed her at her new store on Rosemary Street, the Red Door.
Right. Some great pictures of pretty good furniture in your magazine.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. It was good. Now you'll notice in that article, we didn't ask her about her husband. We didn't ask her about her illness. We didn't ask her about the scandal because she's a local gal, and it's not because everybody doesn't know about it. It's because everybody does know about it that we don't have to talk about it. We asked her what it's like to, you know, at this point in her life, and everybody knows what point in her life it is. What's she doing opening a store in Rosemary Street?
Yeah,
isn't that interesting?
That's the question everybody had, but nobody was asking.
Right, everybody was saying, how do you feel?
Or always giving her the chance. Yeah.
Well, we had a picture of her. People could see, make their own conclusions, and frankly, couldn't have cared less about her and her husband. And I laughed and I said, Elizabeth, I always call her Ms. Edwards, and she always says, call me Elizabeth. And I always say, yes, Ms. Edwards. You know, I mean, she's just kind of formidable in my view. But, you know, I told her, I said, look, you don't ask me about my marriage, and I won't ask you about yours. And that's the way we roll. Our magazine is, I don't know what people think about that, but that's just, I'm comfortable at that level.
We're visiting with Dan Shannon. Dan is the founder or co-founder and the co-owner of the Chapel Hill Magazine. He and I'll be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Dan Shannon is my guest, and he's the founder, owner, promoter. He lives inside Chapel Hill Magazine, and we're getting kind of an inside story. We've been pushing hard to get further inside than Dan's been willing to take us so far. But Dan, during the break, you said there's a vacuum in Chapel Hill. It was like a prophet coming in and saying something, and there's something's wrong in Chapel. What is the vacuum in Chapel Hill?
Well, when I started the Chapel Hill Magazine, it's a very robust and powerful newspaper, two of them. That was 5 years ago. We don't have that anymore. People, and not because newspapers have started doing a bad job. They didn't just start doing a bad job and people walked away. The thing is, people's habits have changed. You and I are probably dinosaurs if we read paper and ink, which I do, but not as nearly as much as I used to. I'm really an online.
I'm still a real page turner.
Yeah, but you say that kind of with pride, which shows how odd it is nowadays.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's
right.
Kind of like, well, I, you know, it's kind of like bragging.
It's like
I agree.
It's almost like when I was growing up, there was a guy guy who put shoes on horses, and he was very proud of it.
Yeah,
his business was kind of evaporating, but he had a little bit, and he was sure proud that he could do it.
Well,
and
the point is that newspapers have had a nice 400-year run. And I fret about our town, and in even the larger thought that we alluded to earlier was our country without coverage of newspapers.
So you think, or I'm putting words
I'm
in
worried.
Your mouth, but you think that because of the weakness in the newspaper business that we're missing something in terms of day-to-day coverage?
Of course,
I mean,
sure.
You do listen to WCHL News, and you know that we cover the waterfront.
We do, and CHL does, and I have reporters out there all the time talking and writers and whatnot, but the truth is newspapers are special. They might have 20 reporters to our one or two, and these are people who worked in the city hall for 30 years. I mean, these were trained people, and that is just imploding over the last few years. Don't you think? I mean, I read an article now about a school board, and I'm sitting there thinking, I question whether the reporter's ever been to one before.
This is the first time this reporter might have been there, or that this reporter covers as especially something else.
But the point,
do it.
But the point I'm going to make is that it's not that the papers have gotten lousy. It's that people are getting their information elsewhere and they don't have time for newspapers. I probably read more news than I ever have. I just don't read it in the print. And I think that's true for most people.
So where's the vacuum then?
There's no local information online. There's no local – there's no great local news. Last year, the NNO did a great job on exposing former Governor Easley's – it almost sounds like silliness, but whatever it is, he sounded like he was up to stuff. I don't know exactly the details, but I read the NNO and I thought this is exactly what a newspaper should be doing. Mm-hmm. This is exactly what the NNO should be doing. We don't see as much of that anymore at the local level, and I worry about it. It takes a lot of money. And now I think
is
the CHL –
is it your impression that there's that there similarly marginal things going on in Chapel Hill that should be being covered that aren't being covered? Do you think we've got some
I've got no insight on that mm-hmm. whatsoever, but I will tell you that human nature being what it is, it will occur. If there's no watchdog, people tend to do people things, don't they?
Yeah.
CHL and Chapel Hill Magazine, I think, tend to have a responsibility. I don't know how we're going to fulfill it, though.
Dan Shannon, I want to change course.
Yeah.
Change horses for just a minute because we just got you for a couple more minutes. And one of the exciting things from me looking at what you're doing is your opportunity to see Chapel Hill and Durham and compare them. We've been talking about Chapel Hill Magazine mostly the last few minutes. But one of the important things that you've done is 2 years ago you founded a new magazine in Durham called Durham Magazine. So you know both communities now. You've had to go.
I really do.
So what are the interesting differences that you found in if you're describing to somebody from Gary, Indiana about where they should live? What are the respective advantages and disadvantages, or what does Chapel Hill have to offer versus what Durham has to offer?
Yeah, what's the difference between these two great communities? Chapel Hill's more comfortable with itself, I think. Durham is more dynamic right now. I think that the center of gravity for all the arts in the triangle are spilling towards Durham right now. I think DPAC was huge. I think the American Tobacco was huge. I think downtown Durham is huge.
And you
huge.
Realize that there's some people listening right now who've never been to DPAC. That'd be understandable because it's still relatively new and never been, but more harder to understand, never been to American Tobacco, you know.
Yeah, I know.
And so tell us why is that? And so the people in Durham are they're Avis, they're number two, but they're working harder.
I mean, they are working harder. I think I have a lot of friends in Raleigh and they feel it too. They feel as though the excitement is transferring to Durham. Durham has done a lot in the last decade, haven't they, to restore that city to greatness. And while it may not be there yet, it's on its way. I mean, I see it every day. I talk to I'll give you an example, right? And this is just the way it is. When I started Chapel Hill Magazine, it took me forever to get a meeting with the town government, right?
It's hard to believe, but
they don't know me and they don't care and whatnot. I think that, and when I started Durham Magazine, I called Mayor Bell and he said, Durham Magazine, can you come in tomorrow? And I thought, boy, I felt so welcome there. I don't feel unwelcome in Chapel Hill. I really feel
welcome.
It's
just not the aggressive, it's the friendliness of an established in charge person, whereas in Durham, it's the friendliness of somebody who, come help me.
Clear way I can say mm-hmm. this is exactly that. But I will say it's easier to do business in Durham, even though it's sometimes harder. It's more fun in Durham, even though it's sometimes harder. It's a city built on commerce, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We're a city built on academia and health, even though we're a very commercial town here. And I mean, let's face it, Chapel Hill is a city now. It's a bustling little city. Even though I like to call it a town too, it's not. And it won't be again. So what's the difference? Gosh. I'm not gonna be able to fully answer that. But I will tell you, Durham is an exciting place. And I love Chapel Hill. I live in Chapel Hill.
Well, you live in Chapel Hill. I live in Chapel Hill. Most of the people – we got some folks in Durham who listen to us. But what would you tell
– just hope not in Gary.
what would you tell those of us who live in Chapel Hill that's over in Durham that we might be missing that we can appropriate for our own enjoyment because it's close enough?
Well, DPEC's great. I mean, there's nothing like
this
it here.
This is the Performing Arts Center.
Performing Arts Center. It's this huge, white, wonderful building that the city invested in. The city believed
in. And it's good for looking at, but it's good for seeing what kind of performances there. What
I go, well, you know, they keep it busy all the time. They have Broadway musicals. They have Wicked, which I didn't see, but I'm guess I'm poorer for it. But they'll have local musicians there, and they've got this and that. But by the same token, and this isn't just to be fair, I prefer Playmakers. I go to Playmakers here in Carolina, and I see you there, DG, and it's just a wonderful – I mean, it's a first-class presentation. I just find it easier to get to and whatnot. But well, I don't have to do one or the other. I can do both.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would say DPAC is something that people shouldn't miss.
Dan Shannon, we're through.
Are we done?
We're done. And I've got so many other things I want you to talk about. But what can we look for coming up, not just in the next issue, but in the future for Chapel Hill Magazine? Or are you done? Is it just going to be more of the same?
No, it's changing all the time. The thing about a magazine, and I'll be brief here, is that for people to be happy with it, they want it to be exactly the same and completely different every issue.
Right.
Exactly the familiar environment with all new stuff. And frankly, we're attracting the best and the brightest. I love the people who work with me, and they're making it their own. So I just have to a little bit get out of the way. But what do you say? Don't you think every great community has a great magazine? I mean, I'd love to do a Greensboro magazine or a Winston-Salem, or I don't think there's one called Raleigh magazine. So there's still opportunities.
Well, all right, we'll keep an eye on you and hope that you'll come back and share your dreams with us again. Our guest has been Dan Shannon, the publisher, the owner, the founder of Chapel Hill Magazine and Durham Magazine. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you so much, DJ.
Thanks to all you all for listening. This has been Who's Talking?